You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey. Me that's going to take flack from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster.
Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 3 of Cawley's Call. Delighted to have you again. Busy weekend, even busier than it normally is, because obviously there was two sets of games, one on Friday night and one last night, so we're going to discuss all those games, but over the course of the weekend, rather than going into the specifics of each night, I suppose. That's probably the best way of doing it. We were obviously in Derry, our first night away, Stuart.
Yeah.
Two years, roughly.
Yeah, felt like it was 10 years, didn't it?
Yeah. So it was great to be away. We're going to go into the game. We're also going to go into our night away, Cawley's Call on Tour. But I'm just going to run through the results from Friday night. Bohemians drew 2-2 with Dundalk. Drogheda were beaten 2-0 by Shelburne. Shelburne's first points. St. Patrick's Athletic, surprise defeat, some might think, but a great result for Sligo Rovers in beating them 2-1. And UCD Finn Harps played out a 0-0. Draw, and then obviously that led us to Monday night's games, and we're going to go through them later in the show. I was in Dalymount last night, and then we're going to discuss the weekend's football as a whole, I suppose, and cover all the results and how they got on and how the different teams performed over the weekend. But Stu, yeah, we were in Derry. I enjoyed the game. Probably not the best game in the world. The wind, I'm not sure if people were picking it up on their television screens, but the wind was very, very strong, made it a difficult evening for the players. But in terms of the scoreline and the result, I know it was a late goal, but I think Derry probably edged it over.
You would say that, because you know, you kind of make your own luck, don't you, really, in this game. And I think that's what they did, to be quite honest with you. You know, the goal was, it was a mistake from Lopez, but you know, it's what he had to do after that, McGonagall, to finish it off, because he pretty much had half a pitch to run, didn't he? And there was a couple of Rovers defenders got around on the recovery, so he had a lot to do still. He really did. He didn't panic last minute of the game, last few seconds of the game, and when he picked up the loose back pass from Lopez, he's made a 35 yard run, whatever. And he's had the composure to not kind of panic and shoot straight away, but check back inside onto his favourite left foot. And then the finish is top notch, isn't it, really, to be quite honest. So from a neutral's point of view, it was a fantastic ending to the game, because it just put that little bit of gloss on the game. Because the game wasn't great, you know, it wasn't great. It was messy, it was scrappy. It was you know, certainly had the signs of two teams that aren't at it yet. Probably more so Rovers than anything. And maybe the changes were the reason that Rovers weren't at it yet. Like, you know, and this idea of Rovers having so many players at their disposal is going to be a headache for Stephen, to be honest, because he's going to have to get the balance right every week. There's no doubt they can do that, and they will get there. But it's playing particular personnel it's matching particular personnel with other personnel is going to be the key for him. Like, and I thought Derry were very good in the second half. I have to say, they had the wind in the first half, like you said, so I was kind of expecting Rovers to sort of really come at them second half, but they didn't. Derry, you know, just sort of got the ball down, passed it around. Patching was excellent at times in the game, and took his penalty extremely well as well. So I don't. It looked like it was going to be a draw. It really did. I had that real feel about it, but you can't take it away from Derry. They kept going. They seized on the opportunity that was given to them, and yeah, probably just edged it in the end.
Yeah, it was a great goal to finish it off, as you say, Stu. And he was very good on the night, McGonagall. I was slightly critical at half time because he was a little bit erratic in his finishing. He did have 4 or 5 half chances at best, but he was slashing at things. But once the opportunity arose in, as you say, in injury time, a lot to do. We had a lot to do. We were down behind that goal, and it was absolutely fantastic finish. And to be fair to him, he looks like a game, honest lad. He kept going all night, occupies the centre halves, gives them plenty of work, plenty to do. And I think he'll do very well for them this season. The big question going into the match, Stu, was, and we've obviously discussed this in the first couple of weeks, everyone was focusing on the fact that Derry City could possibly be title contenders, and we're hoping that may be the case this year and push Shamrock Rovers. That was the big question going into the night. Coming away from the Brandywell, regardless of the result, do you think Derry can sustain a title challenge?
Oh, I do now, yeah. Absolutely do now, yeah. Especially considering the players that weren't playing as well. So they've definitely got they've got a lot more in the tank, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, we kind of, look, one of the things we did talk about, you know, before the game as well, is that this league, it has that habit of putting you into a position where you kind of have to, react, like, you know. So in other words, if you find yourself top of the table, for whatever reason, you know, for a sustained period, or you find yourself second and you find yourself going toe-to-toe with Shamrock Rovers, you have to react to the situation you're in, like, you know, and you have to have a little bit of belief that you can go and do these things. And all that aside, I would expect Derry to be knocking on the door. I mean, you can't ignore the fact that not only is there, you know, very, very good investment in the club now, but they've got a great infrastructure there. Like, they've got a fantastic ground.
They looked the part the other night,
didn't it? They looked the part, yeah. There was a great atmosphere at the ground. You know, team city, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, so you would always expect Derry to be knocking on the door, but this year more than ever, you know, Rory Higgins getting a 4-year deal. There's you know, look, like everything just seems to be settled there, you know, and they're backed up. So look, they have to have a go at it. And it's it's their responsibility to have a go at it. You have to have a go at it. Like, you know, you can't just, I'm kind of getting a little bit pain in my hole, for want of a better phrase, of hearing players coming out saying, oh, we'll see how it goes and whatever. Like, have a fucking go. Have a go, like, you know.
Well, to be fair, they were having a go the other night, and I think they will.
Like, yeah. I'm kind of thinking more about Chris Forrest's comments after the Shelburne game. We'll see where we are, and then they go get beaten twice.
Yeah.
And I'm not blaming Chris on that, but what I'm trying to get across is that psychology and mentality is really big in this, like, you know. And sometimes you can talk yourself into a league title, but you can talk yourself out of it as well.
Yeah.
And they're in trouble now. Yeah. They've lost two games, and they really are. They're scratching. Mm. You know, they really are.
Well, we'll get to them, because I was in Daly Mount last night and saw them being beaten, and they deserved to be beaten. Bohemians were very good. But just before we finish up with the Derry ones, Stu, a lot of talk about Jack Byrne, Mandrew, all the standout players. But for me, one, Patrick McElhenney, Duffy. But for me, one who stood out massively, and he'll have a big impact on Derry City's chances if they are to go on and maybe push for a title or win a title, and we saw him in the flesh the other night, and everybody knows about his talent, but Will Patching was absolutely outstanding, wasn't he? Particularly second half. And he looks like one of those players, we were watching him closely, and you nearly want to shake him and give him a kick up the arse.
If I play with him now, I'd be raw. I'd be fucking roaring and shouting at him, like, you know. But I think you do have to kind of take a step back to understand what this guy is about. And if I played it with Patching, there's no doubt about it, we'd have had problems in the early stages, but I would have come around to his way of thinking. Like, you know, he's definitely that kind of player. You have to give him room to breathe, and you have to allow him to kind of drift in and out in games, because that's where he's effective. So if I think was it Thompson is playing alongside him,
and Harkin,
if they can adjust their games, they look at this lad can play, he can cause damage. You do this, you do that, and we'll.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Stu, because I thought Kieran Harkin was outstanding on the night in doing all that donkey work for him. Because if you have the likes of Patrick McElhenney, Patching, these lads who are going to win you a game, you do need the other lads to complement it. And that's no disrespect to them.
And let's not. I tell you what, let's not call it donkey work anymore. Because in fairness, you're right. Harkin,
what would you call, if it's not donkey work?
An
what
integral
would you call
part
it?
Of the team structure.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay,
that's
you know,
fair.
And the balance of the team, it's huge, absolutely huge. Like, you know, let's not underestimate this, because all the great teams have those players. Like, you know, let's go back to the history of the game. Like, you know, you had McAlealy at Claude McAlealy at Real Madrid, and then you've got, at the moment, you've got the thing at Chelsea. His name's gone out of my head. Like, you know, he's appreciated now. Kante at Kante, Chelsea. Yeah. Like, he's appreciated now, but maybe McAlealy wasn't 20 years ago, but look, the list is endless. You need.
Did we appreciate Jim Crawford enough?
Well, I did. I certainly did, yeah.
Was Jim doing a lot of that donkey work?
Yeah. Well, I'd have done it myself, Alan. Yeah, like, you know, if I had to play alongside Wes Houlihan or Joseph and Doe, I'll go, here, look, I'll put my hand up. I'll do that, no problem.
No, I didn't mean it in a disrespect, because Harkin's a very good player.
That's where the
balance
comes in.
But it's a fair point, yeah. Because you look at Pat's...
They can all play, Alan. All these lads can play now. Yeah. They're all technically good. The game requires you to be technically good. It requires you to be physically fit and in good physical condition. There's no fat bastards anymore. There's no one getting away with it anymore. But what you have to do is you have to accept the fact that a team that's going to challenge for trophies and do well in Europe and so on and so forth, there has to be balance, and you have a place in that team, and you have to be at peace with what your position is in that team, and that's what makes a good team. So these are all the questions that Derry have to, you know, it's by no means decided yet. It's all still ongoing. I'd even argue Rovers' balance is a little bit off.
And that's what I've said. I was going to bring you to that, because you look at Derry's with the likes of Harkin and Thompson, who will do that kind of stuff for you, maybe more so than you look at Shamrock Rovers. And I would say the only one that will really do that is Gary O'Neill. And he's still not kind of... Gary O'Neill is technically very good, more intercepting and reading rather than actually going around into crunching tackles. So you could argue Derry probably have better balance in that area of the pitch with the likes of Harkin and Joe Thompson and options there to do that kind of work for the likes of a Patching McElhenney, whereas Shamrock Rovers probably don't. But obviously they still have top quality in terms of Jack and Dylan Watts and Mandrow. They're going to dominate 80% of the games. But I just find when it comes to those bigger games, that is a question that teams maybe will ask Shamrock Rovers, because you really only have Gary O'Neill that sits in front of the back four.
Yeah, well, the problem the other night was very simple for me. It was the fact that when you've, like, if I was Jack Bourne or Richie Towell, okay, like, I don't need to be dropping in on top of a centre half to get the ball when I have Gary O'Neill playing there. Let him do it. He can do it. Like, and Gary, I thought he looked a little bit swamped the other night, and he was quite a little bit in himself and whatever. And I'm sure that's a situation that Rovers need to sort out amongst themselves. But that was their problem the other night. You can't have Gary O'Neill, Jack Bourne, and Richie Towell, all three, just dropping in on top of their own centre half. Like, you need Jack Bourne, Richie Towell up the pitch to do what they're good at. And so, like, they never really created much Shamrock Rovers and that, and they weren't probing at Derry. You know, it was at times, and there was only. You know, small spells in the game where Rovers did get their mojo going. They were moving the ball well.
Probably when the substitutions were made, Burke came on and made a difference.
I agree with that. And then it led to the free kick, of course. That
Dylan
ultimately
Watts.
Led to the goal. But of course, yeah. And then that was at the time when he took Towell off, took Cotter off, made three substitutions, brought Dylan Watts on. And then the balance looked completely different and it's completely changed. But look, these are all lessons that not just the managers have to learn, Rory Higgins, Stephen Bradley, but the players have to. You have to accept your place in a team.
No room for egos.
The day of players winning games on their own consistently week in, week out is gone, and it's been gone for as long as I was playing. Yes, Rovers have Jack Bourne and they have Richie Taylor Manju who can on their day win a game of football. But they're not going to do it week in, week out. You know?
Well, we saw that because Jack was quiet Friday. Fast forward then to Monday night, they're playing Drogheda at home. He's far further up the pitch, picking the ball up in those little pockets where we love to see him. Sets up Sean Gannon for an unbelievable assist. As good a pass as you'll see.
Yeah.
And then the goalie receives the ball in that little area where kind of, does the centre half go in with him? I felt Drogheda were kind of poor defensively, but take nothing away from Jack picking up a brilliant position, receiving on the back foot. Obviously, his only eyes then on maybe a pass or a goal, unleashes an absolute rocket, and they're the areas you do want to see him in. But I'm sure going forward these are all the things Shamrock Rovers will iron out, and it was good for them to bounce back, I suppose, with a 3-1 victory. Drogheda disappointing again, suffered a defeat on Friday again last night, and it's been a disappointing start for them. But before we go away from Derry Shamrock Rovers, and we're still on Friday night, Stu, we went out on the town then. Now it wasn't as wild as many may think, but it was a lot wilder than what we've been doing for the last 2 years. But we were so well looked after by a young man by the name of Paddy Simpson, and we have to give him a mention, Stu, right? This young man called Paddy Simpson met us in the pub, the Blackburn pub it was called, took us under his wing, looked after us, bought us a couple of pints, all the lads, all the crew that was with us. Turns out he's a big Derry City supporter, friend of Rory Higgins, and he was an absolute smashing lad. Also in the pub was Philip O'Doherty. going around like the billionaire chairman buying drink for everyone. Nah, I'm only joking.
Yeah, well, when I heard Philip was there, I was genuinely expecting to go over to him and for him to give me at least 100 quid. Fuck's sake, like, you know.
You were expecting a contract.
Yeah, exactly. 100 quid. What's wrong with that? Come to him.
So, despite what Manny may think, he wasn't flashing the cash. He was actually, so we got Paddy introduced us to Philip. Absolute gentleman, lovely man. Sitting having a couple of pints on a Friday night after a win, his team winning, out with his mates, couple of pints, and a really lovely man
entrepreneur, isn't he, Paddy?
Paddy is, isn't he?
Yeah, he was very good. You're right, he was very good, and he was very kind to us, and he looked after us. But yeah, he's a young entrepreneur, that lad. He'll go far.
If there's any mums listening out there and you're looking for a perfect gentleman for your daughter, Paddy Simpson even walked us home back to the hotel and left us off and made sure we got home okay, didn't he, Stu?
He did.
So big shout out to Paddy Simpson looking after us well. And the good news is Philip O'Doherty is that much of a gentleman. He's coming on the podcast next week, Stu, and we will have a proper chat with him. And he was a lovely, lovely man, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I'll get me 100 quid then.
So that was Friday night, folks. All went well. The people of Derry looked after us great. It was great to be back in the Brandywell. One little sour note, and I don't want to delve too much, but I was really annoyed. The scenes with some supporters, Shamrock Rovers supporters jumping on the pitch. There's no place for it, Stu, right? And yeah. I'm going to go through it, right?
Let's talk about how
I saw it. Because obviously people didn't see it on the television screens. We spoke to the director about it, and they veer away from all that. Across the world, they veer away from anything like that. The director doesn't cut to it, which is fair enough. But we were in the ground, we saw it. Anyone else who was in the ground would have seen it. When Dylan Watts scored, down at the back of the goal where the Shamrock Rovers fans were, the little advertising hoardings or railing or whatever, they decided about 20, 25 of them to jump over the railing onto the pitch. Now, nothing happened in that incident, but they were over the railing, running around, celebrating, whatever. But there's just no room for it. Then McGonagall scores in the 95th minute. He runs out to the kind of corner where the Derry City fans are. A load of them run on and jump onto the pitch, mainly kids, celebrating a 95th minute winner, which I have no problem with whatsoever. But because they seen the Shamrock Rovers fans running on earlier, then there was a few Derry fans that kind of were up goading them. Shamrock Rovers fans then decide to jump over the railing again. And before you know it, there's three or four fellas in the middle of the pitch, basically fighting in the middle of the pitch. Now, I'm no snowflake by any means, right? But there can't be any room for this, Stu. Like, it's getting out of hand with people jumping on the pitch, running on the pitch, fighting on the pitch. Like, we're trying to promote the league. I think we do a decent enough job of it. There's a lot of positivity around the league at the moment in terms of people rowing in behind it, getting behind it. We're looking for government investment. We're looking everybody to row in behind it, improve facilities, improve everything about the game. And there is genuine hype about it here. But we can't have our cake and eat it. If this carry on is going on and they're ruining it for the good supporters, these idiots need to be just thrown out of the... they're not fans.
Yeah, no, well, there's a very good reason why, you know, let's say a couple of years ago or last year, when you see fans jumping on the pitch celebrating, you kind of... There's a reason why people speak out about that and say that needs to stop, because ultimately it's going to lead to problems, okay? And people might be looking at it going, they're only whatever. But the issues that people have been talking about came to fruition the other night, okay? And it did come to fruition tonight. And what we saw was awful. It was disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. I was raging.
I was in shock over it. I can look after myself. I'm sure you can look after yourself. But to see this, and it happened, it kind of happened, there was a huge sort of furore over the goal and everyone's jumping around, but it happened on the halfway line, on the pitch, whereby One Derry City fan got a bit brave, in fairness, and obviously ran, I would say, three quarters of the length of the pitch towards the Shamrock Rovers end. But for the Shamrock Rovers supporter to get to him, he left immediately. So he went looking for trouble. Mm. He went out of his way to encounter this guy on the pitch, and let's call a spade, probably digged him in the head, I'd say, five or six times. He had him down on the ground and he was laying into him, okay? He was wearing a khaki green bubble jacket, and somebody knows who he is. I would imagine a lot of people know who he is. He should be fucked out of the game, and he should never be allowed back into a League of Ireland game ever again, right? Yeah, no room for him, okay?
No, there's not.
And whoever's running on pitches, okay, you can give them the slap on the wrist and whatever, but this guy needs to be caught and he needs to be thrown
and
out.
And look,
I'm just gonna so this is not an anti Shamrock Rovers team, right? We spoke to a majority of Shamrock Rovers fans were looking at this clown going, look at this clown.
Because there was fans back in our hotel.
Look what
he's
doing. He's giving us a bad name.
Exactly.
This gobshite now is going to give us a bad name. So to be fair to them, they stood back and watched as this gobshite did what he did. And then there was even trouble again after the game where the stewards were I think they were still trying to get a hold of him. And to be fair to the Shamrock Rovers fans, they stood back and let it happen and just... They don't want that to do with this guy.
No, and the thing, and it looks, Stu, and that's the thing, because straight away when I mentioned that, people, oh, you're anti Shamrock Rovers, the usual rubbish that you have to listen to, right? It's nothing to do, regardless of any of the club, whatever the club that was playing the other night, and if that incident took place, we'd be the very first people to call it out. Because there's no, it was, honestly, I was raging, because we don't want that. We're trying to promote the thing and get it up and running. Finally, we're feeling as if there's a bit of goodwill towards the league that we've been neglected for years and we've all cried about it, and now we're at a position where we feel there's a bit of hope and a bit of life and people want to get involved in this. There's no room for it. So I was raging, and we even went back to the hotel and I was explaining that to you. Three or four fans came in. We had a chat with them, didn't we, the Shamrock?
Yeah,
and the simple
brilliant.
Question we asked, we says, lads, like, you can't stand by and allow this. And they were raging, weren't they, saying these fellas are ruining it for all the good Shamrock Rovers fans that want to travel around and support them.
They're season ticket holders. And we're trying to figure out who these are. An element has come into the game now. I know there's always been trouble. Look, I'm not trying to bury my head in the sand here. There's always been problems, okay? And there's always been an element. And, you know, definitely we need to continue the process of trying to identify who these guys are that are causing trouble, and we need to just get rid of them, okay? But what I would say is, and this is from my point of view, the only reason that we're probably both going on about this is because I've seen, that's the fourth incident now in the last year that I've seen that is really worrying me, okay? There is stuff has been going on at games on television that is purposely not being shown, but it's awful stuff, okay? And so there's an element coming into the game now. I don't know whether it's they're looking to cause trouble. They're angry, they're aggressive. I don't know what's wrong with them, and they're using the game, they're using the particular football club that they're following as a way of causing trouble. And we need to stop them now. Get a hold of them and get them out. So whoever the lad was, green khaki bubble jacket, you know, it's not rocket science, lads.
Okay, well said, Stu. Well said. Moving on to the games, I was back in Daly Mountain last night, and little Harry, our first game of the season, Stu, and it was a great game, great crowd again. Obviously, both selling out tickets. Pat's had a brilliant crowd with them as well, and it was a really good game. And that was the first time we were getting a look at Bohemians. Because obviously they didn't play the first week. We were in Derry Friday, but different changes to the personnel, obviously, that we spoke about in the build up to the league. So they lined out basically, Stu, Talbot and goals, young lad Grant Horton at the back, James Finnerty, Tyreek Wilson left full, Rory Feely right full, in the middle, a lad Doherty, new player, alongside Dawson Devoy, who was playing in a deeper role, Ali Coote ahead of him. But again, on the wing, and we've spoken about this, on the wing, where they've been so dangerous with Liam Burt and Ali Coote over the last couple of seasons, Twardek prior to that, but they were very, very dangerous again. Twardek is so direct, caused havoc really all night, gave Anto Breslin a bit of a rough time, and Anto was coming back, obviously having played with Bowes last year. And over on the far side, almost like a new signing, Stephen Mallon, who was there last year, cursed with injuries, but looks fit and strong. If he can stay fit, he looks a real player too. Got the goal, got the winning goal. They should have been ahead before that. He actually had a brilliant chance, Stephen Mallon. Where I was sitting in the stand, it looked like an unbelievable save. One of those ones where you're thinking the goalkeeper's no chance, and all of a sudden he dives out and over with a brilliant save. People have told me who have seen it on the screens and telly, he should have scored, and he should have scored, Mallon, but I would like to give the goalkeeper credit. It was a great save. But Bohemians impressed me, Stu, considering obviously the departures, some high profile ones, Georgie, Ross Tierney, Keith Buckley, but I think Bowes will be fine and they'll do well again. And Keith Long, to be fair, and Trevor, we keep mentioning this about losing players and having to recruit. I don't see them challenging in any way, but I certainly see them in around those European positions, absolutely, with what I watched last night.
Yeah, and then for their second game of their season, it's a huge result for them, absolutely a huge result for them. And the fact that I would imagine they would have been looking at this result as a very, very difficult one, the Dublin Derby, and a St. Patrick's Athletic team coming there. I know they came there off the back of a defeat. They were beat by Sligo, weren't they, in Richmond on Friday night,
which was a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, it was certainly a surprise to me, especially considering Pat's home farm was very good. Their home farm was good last year,
and Sligo hadn't played the previous week. Yeah. And obviously, Pat, you covered a game where they beat Shelburne. So,
when you look back at the Shelburne game, you could see their, like, I mean,
3-0 probably flattered them.
It definitely flattered them. They have that quality, there's no doubt about it, to get goals out of nothing. But like there was problems there which you would have expected would have been fixed against Sligo Rovers, and they obviously weren't. I'm interested to know what they were like last night.
Well,
because the Sligo result definitely would have knocked the team, and you're always looking for how they respond to the Sligo result. I don't know if you remember what we spoke about last week. I made some comment. I think I got myself a little bit confused, but I was basically making the point that good teams, when they haven't played well but they've won, they come away saying we haven't played well. You know, and the opposite is the
case. They're honest in their assessment.
You have to look at the performance and look to improve all the time. So I was keen to see how Pat were going to respond to that Sligo result. That's a big kick in the nuts for them.
Yeah,
you know?
And
I would have expected them to see a response.
I didn't see it.
And they're in trouble now, Al. Two losses out of three.
No, and what surprised me the most, and I'm not sure, I haven't heard any interview with Tim after the game or anything, but the lineup, Stu. So that no Dara Burns. There was no Billy King, who had played in that kind of role behind Owen Doyle in the first game. Now, I'm not sure how he played on Friday, but he didn't start. Noah Banco at the back. So it was unusual, like, in terms of the personnel that played. It was a surprise lineup for me, because they all came on, so they weren't injured. They all came on. For me, it's a bit early in the season to be rotating fellas around.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that. So incidentally, because Billy King didn't play in that central role where he was, Mark Doyle came in and played off Owen Doyle.
Mark Doyle didn't start.
No, he did start, but he played centrally rather than where he played the night against Chelsea. He was wide on the left. Awolabi played out there. Now, he had a couple of half chances, Awolabi, but he's very predictable, cutting in on the right all the time. He's very easy to read. And McClellan played. So it surprised me, the team selection, because I looked at them on the very opening night, and that four in attack with Owen Doyle, Billy King off him, Mark Doyle on the left and Dara Burns on the right. You're thinking this is a really dangerous front three or four, like, you know, that they're very good. There's goals in this team. Whereas I looked at it last night, and I don't know why Tim, obviously he would have had his own reasons, and it may have been based on the performance against Sligo Rovers. Obviously I didn't see that game. It may have been based on that, I don't know. But that surprised me. And just in general in the game, Stu, Bohemians should have been two or three up, really, in the first half.
Well, I'm of the opinion of this, right, is that, like, I spoke about Pat's start of the season, you talk about Derry, and that's fine. I mean, and that's, you know, that's not breaking news. That pretty much everyone's looking at, really, Pat's and Derry to kind of push Shamrock Rovers. The key for both those clubs, Pat's and Derry, was to get some sort of good start. You know, you have to get a head start at Rovers, because Rovers will... you know, they're the experienced team. They have the squad. You know that they will be consistent, even if they're not at it and they're not at 100%. They will eventually hit form, and you know they will be there all. You know they will maintain that level all year out. That's all they did last year. They weren't by any stretch of the means fantastic last year. They were just consistent week in, week out, and that's the team that wins the league. It's the team that's consistently good week in, week out.
That's fair.
But the worry now, right? You look at, let's say, for example, the Rovers get turned over by Derry the other night. You're thinking, ooh, maybe, you know, this could be, you know, but like, you look at the table, but Rovers
top of the league. Yeah, I looked,
you know,
at it.
And it's like last year. I mean, we're only three games in. I know a lot's going to happen, but it's like last year all over again. Like, you know, so if you're really looking, where is the challenge going to come from? Look, there's no doubt about it that Pat's. They can't afford to lose any more games. It's that simple. They've actually put themselves under a little bit of pressure now. But I do think they will come good. They'll too many good players in that team. But Derry certainly seem to me to be best place to kind of really put Rovers under pressure. And that's my nap for the gone out the window, because I felt Pats were definitely in it. Only because I felt Pats, only because I looked at Pats against against Shells in the opening night, and I could just see so much improvement on the Pats team. So to come away and talk about 3-0 up, and I know I flattered them, but like I said, that can only, they can only get better.
But prior to that as well, I watched them the week before against Shamrock Rovers, and they played great in the President's Cup.
So what's happened? So maybe Pats are a team at this moment in time. Play your best 11, just get points on the board, and then start to.
Yeah, look, Tim will have his reasons. Of course, he will. In terms of why he made those team decisions or selections last night, and it's totally his call. But it just surprised me a little. But looking at Bohemians last night, and even just the general consensus amongst the fans, and I was sitting in with a few of them and chatting, I think they'll be there or thereabouts, those European positions, Stu. They do have the makings of a decent team. And no Junior, he didn't play last night, and Liam Burt has to come in as well, so Jordan Flores came off the bench. So there's three fellas with a bit of experience and strength and depth as well, so that bodes well for them going forward. Derry, we spoke about them obviously on Friday night. Sligo Rovers have had a great start, 4 points out of six in their two games to go away to Derry, pick up a nil-all draw. It surprised me. I was critical of Sligo Rovers in terms of their recruitment, but speaking to lads after the game against Pats the other night, said they played really, really well. Aidan Keane got off the mark, the centre half as well. Nando, people saying, striking up a good relationship with Gary Buckley as well. So that's been a really good start for them. Dundalk ran out convincing winners 3-0 last night, but I think Finn Harps had a bucket load of chances before Dundalk even scored. Dundalk are wide open, but they'll score goals. You look at the games already, they've scored, I think it was 2-2, 2-2, and they've won 3-0, so there's 7 goals they've scored, but they've conceded 4 as well. But that was a big win for them, beating Finn Harps. UCD, nil-all draw. Shelburne, they'd be disappointed with that, especially getting the win on Friday night against Drogheda away from home. They would have went into that game thinking we'd pick up another 3 points and we're up and running. And Drogheda, as I mentioned, 3-1 against Shamrock Rovers. When I went 2-1, I thought they may have a chance, but obviously once Shamrock Rovers get the third, it's game over, and they will be disappointed with their start as well. 2 defeats. They obviously didn't play the opening night against Finn Harps, but to lose back to back Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers, they will be disappointed with that, Stu.
Yeah, I think you're right about the Dundalk Finn Harps game again. Like a little bit like Pats and Shells, maybe the result kind of flattered Dundalk a little bit. I've no doubt Dundalk started to win the game tonight, but just listening to some of the managers' interviews after the games last night, I think Dundalk certainly felt like they were probably lucky not to be 2-0 down in the first half. But like, you know, you ride your luck in this game, and what they did do very well, Dundalk, is they got themselves together, and they've come away with a convincing win. So again, big points for Dundalk, because, you know,
well, they're going to Sligo now at the weekend, Saturday night, so that'd be a big game now, because Sligo have got off to a good start themselves. That'll be in front of a huge crowd in their showgrounds as well. First home game of the season, so that'll be a great night, Saturday night. The game's on Friday night, Drogheda UCD. That's a massive game already for Drogheda, because these are the teams, as we say. You look at UCD playing Shelburne last night, now they're playing Drogheda. They're the teams who you're going to be in and around. Shelburne, Derry City, Friday night, Stu, to Talca Park. Paddy Simpson wants to meet us down in Talca Park. and the famous Paddy Simpson. St. Pat's, Shamrock Rovers, I'm going to Inchicore for that. That'll be a cracker. And again, Pats have to bounce back now, Stu. 2 defeats back to back. They're under a bit of pressure. Shamrock Rovers on Friday night at home.
They need something over. They need something over big time. Already under huge pressure. You know, especially when you're expected to be up there. I'm always talking about winning league titles, and I don't think you can win two. I don't think you can lose 2 of your first 3 games and win a league title. That's just the way I look at it. But they've got to respond, and they've got to turn it around quickly. And then look, to get a win against Rovers will certainly do that for you. But I can only see Rovers starting to turn the screw now. I think Stephen Bradley will probably look at the Derry performance, and he'll say, can't really play that team again. And he'll look, you know, again, we're talking about this balance all right. I don't think he'll make that mistake twice. And I think Rovers are only going to be strong from here on in.
Just want to run through the results as well from Division 1. So Cove Ramblers beaten 3-2 on Friday night by Wexford. Cork City Gaol, we have to give a mention, Stuart, was nearly 5,000, I think, in Turner's Cross.
Wow.
That's incredible for a first division fixture. Obviously, Caulfield going back, Colin Healy as well in charge here. So that was an unbelievable crowd, and Galway coming away with the 3 points.
And is Colin taking a bit of time away from the game? Is he?
Okay, well, for personal reasons.
Wishing the best of luck, Colin.
We do wish him the best. Waterford beating Bray got beat 6-0 the first week. I had Conan Byrne telling me Bray were going to win the league. in the first division. Sorry, Conan. Sorry.
The first division can go anyway.
Well, Waterford got off to a good start, obviously, and we'd expect them to, I would expect them to win it. That's why I tipped. But they've got off to a really good start. Dave Morris in charge here. So they're the fixtures too for a Friday night. I'm really looking forward to it. We do have a guest on this week's show, the lovely Chloe Mustaki, our first female guest, Joe. Chloe, with the headlines, obviously, over the last couple of weeks. We know her very well because she's done a little bit of punditry work for us as well. She plays for Shelburne. So there's a lot of connections here, Stu.
She's a star, that girl.
She's an absolute star, isn't she? So Chloe is joining us right about now, and we're absolutely delighted to have her on the show. It's been a long time coming, but you're our first female guest, so we're very selective about our guests, to be honest with you, Chloe. So we saved the best to last, or should we say the first, as I say, for being the best. But obviously you hit the headlines over the last couple of weeks. We've known you for a long time in terms of the football scene, and you did a bit of punditry work with us as well, so we're fully aware of the life story. But for others who are not aware, of course, getting your first cap for the Irish team after all you've been through must have been an amazing feeling.
Yeah, well, look, firstly, being the first female guest on the podcast, hopefully I do the gender justice, so thanks for having me on. But yeah, no, look, a bit of a whirlwind a few days last week, the week before as well. Look, something I've been working towards, like any other footballer athlete, for a very long time. A few bumps along the road, which have made it a bit more of a longer road than I would have hoped. But yeah, no, I'm absolutely delighted. Obviously, still kind of coming down from the highlight. But no, hopefully it'll be, you know, something I'll get more opportunities to do in the future as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant. We were delighted for you, Chloe, as I say, because we've gotten to know you over the years. And I actually saw you playing, first of all, I think it was one of the finals in the Aviva, and being a cultured left foot creative midfielder, I was taken by you straight away and was so impressed. But we followed your career, and of course we all know in terms of the setbacks that you've had. But Mustaki isn't your usual typical Irish surname, so I was interested to read you were born in Ohio, an Irish mum and a French father, and I think you stayed for a year before you moved over to Paris then, and then from Paris you ended up back over here.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You've hit the head on the nail there,
Chloe. You should know, all the research has been done, Chloe. You should know from working with me.
yeah, no, absolutely. No, you've hit the head on the nail there. Look, it's been a long road, a kind of very multicultural background. I said I was born in the States, then came back over to Europe with my parents and my brother. So it's something that I really do value in my upbringing. You know, I've had a very diverse educational background as well. I mean, I was schooled through the French system up until I was about 14, and then switched over to an Irish school where I did my leaving cert. And yeah, I've lived in a couple of different countries. I went to Lisbon, to France for masters and everything. So it's definitely something that I value, and I'm glad to have been able to do. So, but yeah, no, it's, you know, I still go over every now and again to see my dad over in France, and being able to kind of use that second language as well has helped me in the past, whether it be, you know, for my leaving cert or otherwise. So it's hopefully something I can do as well and bring upon my future kids if they happen someday. So no, it's something I would probably push upon a lot of people, you know, having spoken to other athletes coming up through the years as well. Being able to do an Erasmus and get that exposure to other cultures is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely, because we all know the backstory in terms of the football, but just your general life, there's a serious story in it as well. But was it always, I suppose, was that when the football started, when you came back here as you were growing up as a kid? Like most kids growing up, Chloe, were out playing on the street. It's not as popular now, I suppose, the way society has changed, but I would have grown up playing on the streets like so many others. I still think there's a place for it and want to encourage it anywhere we can. But was that the starting point for you as well?
Yeah, so I have an older brother, he's 5 years older, and yeah, I think, look, my mum was a single mother essentially, when she came back to Ireland with myself and my brother, and spent a lot of time with him, with his friends, in the garden, out in the street playing football too. And I think that's just how, you know, how the love of the game came about for myself. He doesn't play anymore at all, but it was definitely thanks to him. So yeah, similar to yourself, you know, I don't know, yeah, you don't really see it as much these days. In terms of kids playing out in the street, I I don't really know why that is, but it's definitely helped me in terms of, you know, I started off playing with boys here for Park Celtic, and that's definitely helped me in my development too. So so yeah, I have a lot of credit to give to my brother, but yeah, he doesn't play anymore, so I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, well, you won't get a better kind of grounding than playing on the streets. As I say, I still think there's a place for it because of society and the way things have changed now. You don't see it as frequently, and then you see kids with computers and all sorts of things and distractions, which was slightly different than our day. But in terms of the skill sets that you I suppose can gain from playing on the street and hitting curbs and gates and all sorts of things.
I know it's
the simple things, but that's how, I suppose it's a working class game, but that's how a lot of people over the years and would have come through. To be fair, I know it's just much more structured now, and I know there's a lot of good going on in terms of the coaching side of things for young kids and their development, and it's far better in terms of that. But I still think there's a place for the street football, absolutely, because I look at you and anytime I see you playing, or when I saw you playing first, technically straight away that was the one thing that would stick out with you, that you would have all those skills, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. You said it yourself. Everything is a lot more structured nowadays. I do think for females anyway, playing with boys from an early age is so important to develop that technical ability. And if you even look at the likes of Ellen Molloy, like I remember hearing, a year or two ago that, she had played up until very recently with boys, and you can see that as well, like when she plays, really great technical ability, and that really does help, that does help us a lot. So I know it's something that should really be pushed, and I know obviously Vera at the senior level does push it for the home base players too, so it does help a lot. In terms of street football, being able to work on your touch off the different surfaces as well would help. So I guess nowadays, just as you said yourself, with technology coming on so much, and maybe just crime levels, whatever it may be, you don't see it as much in terms of kids staying out late, but it's variable factors, I think.
Yeah, I think it was 2011 when you signed with P-Mount, Chloe, and obviously you look at the news last week or the week before, obviously, when you got your first cap. So it's been a long time coming, 10 years on the go. Not to suggest you're old, I was actually surprised that you were 26. I still thought you were younger than that. But I suppose when you were growing up and you were coming through the ranks at P-Mount, UCD Waves, you had your year in Paris as well, or Bordeaux, and you were probably playing with all the girls that are featuring now that have become household names, but you would have been playing with them underage, captaining the senior team or the under-19s, different things. How difficult was it? Because you were probably tipped as to come through, like maybe a Denise O'Sullivan or a Katie McCabe, and things didn't quite happen for you as maybe as fast as them because of obviously the illness or whatever, which we'll come to. But how difficult was that, I suppose, when you see the other girls going on and developing? And I suppose you're kind of, maybe you feel as though your career might be stalling a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's actually a question that's rarely been asked to me, really. But to be honest, as I said recently to someone else I spoke to about this, firstly, to answer your question, it was quite difficult, definitely quite difficult, and at different stages as well. Over the past years, it's been more difficult than others. So, for example, obviously when I was going through my ACL rehab, being in a process that where I couldn't, I had very little say in it. I couldn't fast forward my rehab. I was very much, stuck in step one, step two, etc. And then seeing girls, younger girls, take that step to going, abroad, whether it be part-time, full-time, like that was something that was very difficult for me. And over the years, at different stages, I said it has been, but one thing I do need to recognize is I have a part not to blame, but I made decisions over the past 10 years that meant that I was slowing down my football career. Like, I decided to go to college and do, a 4-year degree, which obviously ended up being 5 years because of the lymphoma. I decided to do a master's. I decided to pursue education, which stalled my football career. Okay. So as much as I now would love to go full time, and I look back and I see the likes of Katie McCabe or Claire Shine or any of the girls that would have played at being under 19s level thriving now in sport, I have to take responsibility for decisions that I made to pursue my education. So it's kind of, yes, I have been slowed down for medical reasons, be it for the cancer or be it for the ACL tear, but I've also have to take responsibility for the decisions that I made to pursue, you know, higher level education. So it's probably 50-50. But yeah, I mean, as I said, to answer your question, yes. I mean, there were times where it was very difficult, and I'm 26. So I suppose nowadays, when you look at, you know, the girls that are coming through at such a young age, I'm probably getting into probably the older half of, I suppose, a female's footballing career. But I still think I have a lot to give, and hopefully it's not too late. So hopefully I may get to experience it over the next couple of years.
Well, absolutely, it's not too late. 26, you're only a baby, really, Chloe. But, yeah. But in terms of... I'm glad now that I've asked that, because I would have always felt as though the reason your career had stalled was obviously because of the illness. And for anyone who doesn't know, of course, you were diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which must have been a dreadful, dreadful time for you, and very, very difficult. And then after recovering from that and showing great strength and positivity, then when you're thinking you're getting your career up and running, you were struck down with a really bad injury or ACL. So I would have always thought they were the reasons that maybe held you back a little bit or stalled your career, probably a better phrase. But the reason you chose higher education, I would actually credit you on that, to be honest with you, Chloe. And to me, that was the wise move and the wise decision to make, because football, particularly women's football at that time, wasn't thriving or anywhere near in the place where we see it now. And obviously it's brilliant to see the development of the game and the pace that it's developing at. But I would have always felt, from looking in from the outside and getting to know you or seeing where the women's game was at maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, for me, it's a no-brainer to choose what you chose.
Yeah, exactly. Look, when I was finishing school 10 years ago or so, whenever it was at this stage, it wasn't really that much of a done thing when it came to Irish players. Yes, you had the likes of Katie McCabe, who, you know, just caught the eye and, you know, managed to get those moves from the get-go from a very young age. But for most of us, like, you probably had to put in quite a lot of probably groundwork in terms of conversations if you wanted to kind of go over and get trials. And it was just so much more volatile 10 years ago than it is now. Yeah, so I just felt like, you know, my parents would have pushed this on me as well, like just having that financial security in terms of a degree. And then, you know, after, once you have that, being able to kind of go after what you want. So that's what I did. And, you know, I have no regrets, but as I said, it's definitely a reason as to why I've, you know, it in part not managed to kind of really push for, you know, for full-time football much earlier.
No, well, as I say, it's a no-brainer, because I see it in the men's world as well, Chloe, in terms of young lads going away, throwing all their eggs in one basket. And it can be difficult on parents, absolutely, when there's the lure of a big club trying to sign them. I went through it myself. How do you turn down a big Premier League club? All that kind of stuff. But the education thing must be at the forefront for young kids, whether you're female or male. And I think the decision you made, You're obviously reaping the rewards of it now because of the hard work you put in your education. But your mum's, dad's, obviously the backing that they gave you to go and guide you down that road as well, I think that's absolutely the correct call. And now, when you've all that done, Chloe, and hopefully you've come through, as you say, the setbacks, just how do you feel in terms of the women's game is at a completely different stage and a completely different point now in how you're viewed to maybe the outside world? And obviously you look at the national team and the exposure to get. We've sat on panels, obviously doing the punditry for the games, and it's brilliant to see the games on live telly. But just from your point of view, where you feel you're still 26, loads to offer, it must be so exciting for you to see where the women's game is at now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty surreal. It's pretty frightening as well, to be honest. Like, you know, sitting down, I think I mean, you, as you know yourself from having conversation with me, but most people who know me know that, like, I don't spend much time watching football. But I sat down a few weeks ago to watch the Arsenal versus Man City women's game. I think it was like one Sunday evening. And like, just to see the talent of some of the young girls, you know, at this stage, I'm just like, I just can't believe how quickly the women's game has grown. And it's absolutely fantastic. And it's great, because hopefully someday when I have a daughter, or, you know, girls who are growing up now, there's, you know, there's so many pathways there for them to, you know, become fantastic footballers and be able to make a living out of it. And that's not something that I really had, you know, in terms of aspirations myself, just as I said, 10 years ago, just wasn't quite there yet. So it's great. But, you know, for someone who's vying for a position, you know, whether it be, you know, on the international team or even, you know, in top flight football, like it's a scary prospect. Now, if you work hard enough, you know, as I really truly believe, you can probably get to wherever you want to be. So that's my plan, just keep working hard and hopefully it'll take me there. But yeah, it's you know, it's good and bad. It's bad because it's increased competition and you've got to work on the small percentages that you know females or girls playing football wouldn't have had to work on 15 years ago now to make appearances or to make squads. So it's great. It's, you know, it's what we want, because as a gender, we want to be able to keep making strides forward. But yeah, it's competitive. And like, you know, when I went back into the, you know, senior camp last week, like it was fantastic, but it was also, you know, stark reminder, like, got to keep working on absolutely every aspect of your game if you want to stay there. Like,
but I think that's a clear indication of the rate of development over the years as well, Chloe, because as you say, it's a totally different ball game now in terms of the level that you have to reach, and that can only be a good thing. Embrace the challenge, Chloe. Embrace the challenge.
No, that's it. Absolutely. Give it what you have. Embrace the challenge. And overall, I think it's fantastic. Like, it's fantastic. The level that, you know, we've reached now is pretty incredible over such a short space of time. And the more investment that women's football get, the more it'll grow.
Absolutely, and it's been a great 18 months for you. Obviously, Shelburne, of course, winning the league last year, the drama of the last day of the season and all. And then, of course, Chloe, look, everybody has been, people around the football world, of course, would have a major soft spot for you because of everything you've gone through. But to see you get that cap last week, that's been so long coming, and for you to get that. But I think when you get over the excitement of that, as you say, now you're in a position where you feel hopefully part of the group. Vera obviously has embraced that, wants you involved. You look at what's around the corner in terms of the qualifiers and maybe where this team can go. I've covered all the games in the campaign so far and I would absolutely love to see you involved. So that must be a huge dream of yours now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Absolutely. And look, as I would have stated going into camp, like, there's just so many girls vying for positions at the moment with the Irish squad. So I'm so grateful to have been given that opportunity. And, you know, there's no guarantee whatsoever that I'll be in April. And, you know, I've absolutely no expectations of being in April. So I just need to keep working hard as I have been, especially, you know, since I tore my ACL, just working that bit harder to get back to my best and even better. So yeah, it's fantastic. There's so much potential in terms of the Irish squad. We're just getting stronger and stronger, and it would be absolutely fantastic to qualify for the World Cup. Hopefully, if we do, I'll be on that plane. But all I can look to do now is just work, you know, week in, week out. And, you know, as I said, if it's not for April, it's for June and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the league is kicking off this weekend. And how are you fixed defending the title? Is there a bit of pressure on you, Chloe, going into that?
I don't think anyone's really feeling pressure. I think everyone's excited. You know, everyone's been in for pre-season since kind of early January, so it's been a long time and everyone's ready to go. A few new faces around the squad, which is great. And, you know, added competition for everyone in their positions, which can only benefit the team as a whole. So I think everyone's excited. You know, last year we saw the start of something new with TG Cahir coming on board, you know, showing the games. And if we can just keep that momentum up, it would be great. And, you know, specifically with Shells, we've had some of the men's supporters come on board, come to our games, which has been a great lift as well at times. So it's a really exciting time, as I said, in women's football. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm actually heading out to Piemont because Sligo Rovers, my beloved Sligo Rovers, have a team in the league this year, as you know, Chloe, and their first game, historical moment for them, really. And again, it just goes to show how the development of the women's game has come on. I know Steve Feeney, their manager, really well. He's a great lad, and they have a team competing this year, and it's brilliant to see. And all the League of Ireland clubs that are rowing in behind, obviously getting teams together, it's absolutely brilliant and can only be good for the women's game. So I'm heading out to that on Saturday.
Okay.
I'll give you the lowdown on how things go. But Chloe, it's absolutely brilliant to speak to you. I was so happy to see you get capped, obviously, last week. You've been through so much, but you're a credit to yourself and how you carried yourself throughout all those days. You're not bad at the punditry either, and I wish you really, really well in the months to come, and I'd love to see you involved in the Irish team going forward.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, look, all the best with you guys as well for the podcast. You know, it's always popping up on my social media, so you're obviously saying some sensible things. Hopefully there'll be some good feedback on this one too. But yeah, I really appreciate the support and hopefully see you guys soon.
Okay, thanks, Chloe.
All right, bye, bye.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Vanetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.